one of the big things everyone's talking about now is the schedule for next year, Zach, and what's going to happen. We know we've got the 50 over competition next year, but is there any further news, and I'm sure our listeners up in the Northeast would be interested as well, in terms of what actually is going to be the schedule, when we're going to start, how's everything going to fit into the months of the season?
Well, we're still figuring out. We've got a draft outline schedule that the chief execs and administrators looked at on Monday at Lord's. So the stages are pretty straightforward. We've got some blocked out areas for where the championship will start, and as we know, the majority of the matches will start on a Sunday, which is the first change. And then we know that we're aiming to, you know, have most of the 2020 fixtures starting on a Friday evening and running right the way through the season.
Right.
Then a concentrated period of 50 over cricket. Now, clearly, for what we're trying to do, I think, as a game, is that we've done the research. You know, the ECB have done the research to figure out what the consumer wants, the fan wants. And the objective here really is to take the data, trust it, and then run with it. So for us, the next stage is we will be reviewing as a group what impact that has on our local requirements, and part of that obviously is our festivals and what that means. What's the best scheduling for playing, you know, our teams in terms of turnaround times and what have you. And then from there, we will be going back with filling a questionnaire, which we should receive at the end of the week. We'll have about 10 days to turn that around. So, you know, there's an outline schedule, and I think it's unfair for me to start to publicise that, because it impacts every single county.
Sure.
And every county will go back with their own specific set of issues. But I think the message is that we want to try and be as united as we can to move this forward, because whilst the changes seem dramatic, what we do need, I think everyone agrees, we need to make a decision, stick to it, and get some stability around. You know, chopping and changing formats and fixtures doesn't actually help anyone, frankly.
And does that mean there'll be another meeting, Zach, or do all those recommendations go back to Lords and then say, right, let's get on with it and publish the fixture?
No, I don't think there's another meeting. The meetings are going to be very much internal. I mean, I think that you'll always have the dialogue between one county and another to discuss maybe start times and what have you. But from our point of view, once we've figured out what we can do with what we've got, and we put in our requests into the ECB, we'll get a response, and then we'll get on with it. We'll get on the business of planning, and with the view to hopefully announcing our fixtures in November, which I think is fairly typical of over recent years. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think for a lot of people, the jury's out. The one thing that's wonderful about our great game is that everyone's going to have an opinion.
Yeah, sure. You can't keep everybody.
No, absolutely.
So the T20 competition, predominantly on a Friday night, and that's going to be presumably what sort of, you know, still a group of six whatever and 10 matches.
Yeah, exactly. And then what we'll end up doing is that obviously we play each other home and away. And then geographically, I think where we're looking at, where there's a massive distance, we may play those sides just once. So that's, you know, we're just, you know, figuring that out now at the moment.
Okay, BBC Sussex, and sorry, Trevor was just saying...
Yeah, no, it's two groups of nine, in fact, not two groups of six.
On the
2020.
Right, okay. So that's going to... Right, so two groups of nine. So is that going to be eight fixtures, or how's that going to work out? Right.
Seven home, seven away.
Right, okay. So it's more than this year, then?
Yeah, effectively.
Yeah. So still a little bit to be decided.
Indeed.
But basically, you know, the work's been done, and the fixtures will come out in November. Everyone will have their say, and then off we go. That's the way it's all going to work.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's look at Sussex specifically in terms of, you know, on the field. You know, I think if Sussex come third, if they were to win this game, you know, the chatter around the box was it's been a reasonable season championship-wise. One day form has been very disappointing, Zach. There must be disappointed, particularly at the 2020 campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that we, you know, we start the season and then you read, you know, in the press that we're favourites, which I always find it really intriguing. We haven't even bowled a ball, but we're favourites.
What was that for the T20?
T20. Yeah. And of course, it's based on, you know, previous form and, you know, previous results. And no question that, you know, when you look at our team, we've got a fantastic team and compete. So, yeah, I think we've got to contextualise this. I think that the first few games, I think it's fair to say, you know, when it goes down to the last ball, sometimes it's going to go your way. And sometimes, you know, it isn't. And unfortunately, for the first part of the 2020 campaign, you know, those results just didn't go away. And one would question, had we won, what momentum would that have created? But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat it. We're disappointed. We're going to use this period and have done since the end of the 2020 campaign to really take a hard look at what we're doing, how we're going about it. And the one thing, you know, for the record, I personally, along with the board, have absolute 100% faith that in Mark Robinson and the team to move forward. We're not the first side to have a disappointing season. We certainly won't be the last. I think there's a lot to be proud of. There's a lot to build on. And I think that, you know, we've got to take a look and say, well, what is it that we did that worked? What is it that didn't quite work? And what can we do about it? So I think we've got to be pragmatic. And, you know, and it's important that when we win, we don't over-celebrate. And when we don't do so well, that we don't sort of, you know, overreact. I think, we're disappointed. We can't undo the results. What we can do is learn and move forward.
We'll be having a news bulletin in a couple of moments' time, and then a cricket update on the radio if you get an interruption to what Zach is saying. The fact that you mentioned that, Zach, did that mean that there's been a little bit of criticism around, you know, from members or?
Well, I mean, look, at the end of it, you know, as we said earlier on, there's a lot of people that will have a view on how we're doing. And I think that, you know, of course, there's been comments. People are very quick. We're in the world that you can communicate immediately. Some people have written into me and said, you know, what's going on the field. Others have been very, very sort of pragmatic. But, I can't, you know, it would be wrong for me to say there's been an avalanche of complaints. I mean, that's far, far, far from it. You know, people turned up and actually attended 2020 matches irrespective of the result. Our attendances were up. The feedback we've had on as an event has been generally very, very good. So I think, you know, looking forward, I think that's good. On the championship side of things, you know, we've had a couple of poor results, but generally performed very well. You know, and it's nice that we're finishing here, albeit in the mist, with some decent cricket and some, you know, and some really interesting, you know, interesting connotations. So, yeah, we're excited about that.
When you come back to the T20, when you bring in overseas players, Scott Styris and I think with Smith as well, there's obviously a cost to bringing in those players. Zach, is that then a case of sort of trying to balance what additional you're going to get through the gate against those guys? Because presumably they don't come cheap.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, that you're employing professionals to come and do a job of work for you. And history tells us that both those players have performed absolutely brilliantly for Sussex. You know, didn't quite get the results that we wanted, and we've discussed that, but I'm of an opinion, and it's a personal opinion, I think that having individuals coming in don't actually influence the gate. That's my personal opinion. I think if we were talking about Tendulkar, if we were talking about Dhoni, that might have some interest and it may bring some people in. But I think that the reality of it is 2020 for a lot of people is entertainment. And they want to come and have the event. Is it the deciding factor for the majority to come because an individual player is going to be here? It's a personal view. I may be wrong. I don't think it has that much of an influence.
Talk about financial side of things. We've been hearing from Martin Emerson from BBC Newcastle this week about, you know, Durham have had financial issues ahead at the beginning of the season. They're going to... Will Smith is going to be released at the end of this season, so they're really having to sort of cut their cloth, even despite the fact that they're county champions. I just wonder, from a financial perspective, how Sussex are today and what you're looking at going ahead to next season, whether players will need to be released or quite how you stand budget-wise.
Well, we're in the midst of our budget process now, and we have a policy here that we don't discuss any player-related issues until the season is closed. Not because we feel that any other county is doing anything wrong. But for us, if you're having a conversation about one player, what does it mean with the individual or the other player that's not part of that conversation? So we won't just be discussing players and that. Clearly, the squad will be looked at and has been looked at by Mark Robinson and the team. And we will come to a point where we'll make some decisions. I think it's fair to say that, you know, this year has been a challenging year for us. Despite having Australia and that, you know, we've, you know, our finances, like any county club, have really finely balanced. And one thing that we've always done here, and we will always do, we'll cut our cloth accordingly. You know, we won't, you know, we'll always stay within what we can afford. We pride ourselves on bringing talent through our system, and we'll continue to do that, and picking up players that, frankly, we think we can, you know, bring the best out of. So, you know, Chris Jordan being a fine example of that. So for us, you know, it would be inappropriate for me to say that we're just going to cut the budget, but I think it's fair to say that our focus is very much on containing our costs, not certainly increasing the cost, because we believe that 2014 and 15 are going to be pretty tough for us, you know, and that's fairly typical of the sport, to be honest with you.
in terms of sort of off the field financially, the club's looking in reasonable shape, yeah. But a recognition of the economic climate and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're very fortunate. You know, our limitations are our advantage. We have in the order of 7,000 seats here. We don't have to pay for a huge stadium and everything that goes with it. So we're very fortunate in that. So we can keep our operating costs down to a sensible level. And we run a very, very tight ship. We don't have a debt to speak of. So we're very, very fortunate. You know, we resist the desire to put in new big stands in the anticipation of filling them. And I think, again, we've got to cut our cloth accordingly.
The Australian game you alluded to there, was that a good, not a money spinner, but that was clearly
successful
game.
For us. Yeah. I mean, two sold out days and sort of, I think, 60% sold out on the third. You know, the revenue was solid. Spend per head was up. But I think the thing that's given me most satisfaction is the manner that the team delivered the event. I thought that was just great. Had a real sort of test match feel here for a lot of people. This avoided the journey up into London. And I think the Australians came here to play, no question. And we gave them a good game. You know, no question of that.
We'll talk about some Sussex specific questions in a minute. From the point of view of, and including our listeners up in the northeast as well, when you meet your fellow chief execs around the country, you know, when you're having a meeting, what's the general feeling about the game and cricket and the finances and the England team? Is it sort of people feeling quite confident about the future or?
Yeah, I think. My read on it is that we've all got similar sort of issues, similar challenges, but we're unified in terms of the path that we're going to follow to bring more people into the game. So I think it's positive. I think the relationships with the ECB have never been stronger, and I think the ECB have stepped up a level in my opinion in the way that they're supporting counties and certainly grassroots cricket and recreational cricket as well. So I think for us, I think we're quite optimistic. And I think, you know, I think what's important is that we do need an element of stability within the chief exec setup as well, and working a lot closer together. I think there's a lot more collaboration that's going to happen over a period of time, because frankly, the only place that we really compete is out in the middle. You know, financially, we don't compete.
And in terms of the ECB and, you know, perhaps trumpeting our own course slightly from the BBC, I wondered how the coverage this season with the ball-by-ball across the counties, how that's gone down with your counterparts across the 18 counties.
Really positive. I made the comment the other day, and whether it's right or not, I think we get a lot of comments is, oh, look at Championship cricket, you know, one man and his dog, I think his expression likes to get used, and only, you know, only 500 people coming in. The reality of this is a globally followed sport. People listen to this all over the world. Those people that are in strange parts of the world where they won't see any cricket still connect. And so I think the value of Championship cricket should not be underestimated and shouldn't be measured just by the number of people that come and sit in the stadium. So, you know, I think the coverage that you guys have given, the online coverage and everything else, and the, you know, the sort of sequences that we can get to see, absolutely amazing. And I think, you know, really, really positive.
Question from Martin Davies, who says, can you ask Zach about the success of the Sussex women and the future for women's cricket at Sussex? And just outline how successful Sussex have been this season, Zach.
Yeah, well, thank you. Martin sent me a tweet last night and asked me a specific question. You know, Martin's great because he's a real supporter, a real advocate of women's cricket. I've made no secret, I absolutely love women's cricket. I think it absolutely has got a place. And we had, obviously, the England team here, which provided some fantastic cricket and really good entertainment as well. But for the Sussex women, I think, you know, an amazing year. Talent coming through. We've competed. You know, the ladies are going to Buckingham Palace to receive their award. And
yeah, when's that going to be, Zach?
Well, we haven't got a date, but I think it's sort of October-ish, isn't it? And they've invited me to go along, so that's fantastic. So it's the nearest I'm ever going to get to the palace.
And so who are you meeting there? Are you meeting Her Majesty, or who's it going to be?
Prince, I think it's Prince Philip. So, wow. Well, with his Greek roots and mine, I think we're probably going to get on fine. You know?
But that's fantastic, isn't it?
Great.
You know, great season, and that's a great accolade as well to be going up to the palace. So,
yeah.
And I think the other part of the question was about sort of plans for the future. Really.
Yeah.
Is successful, and so how do you sort of keep that success going forward?
Well, I think that, again, if we, you know, we started off the conversation around the fixtures, and a congested fixtures schedule means what can we actually do here? We've got stage first class cricket. We have commitments there, which obviously that's why we exist. There's a lot of other activities that take place here at Hove. In an ideal world, it would be very nice to have women's cricket sort of being the curtain raiser for 2020. But in saying that, I think we've got to be really, really practical. You know, simple logistics like sorting out the changing facilities, you know, which some would smile at, but are really very important,
yeah,
you know, turnaround time, practice times in a limited space, all that. I think that, you know, we, from our point of view, we absolutely support it. We'd like to look a long, hard look at it, take a long, hard look at it in line with the fixtures and see what we can do. But, you know, our commitment and support to women's cricket in Sussex is just going to increase. It's not going to decrease.
Can I talk about, because it's dark and murky, it wouldn't help today, about the situation here regarding floodlights?
Yes.
Because the Yorkshire game here was a game where it was overcast for much of the game. There was rain around. When it was dry, it was frustrating when the players were off. And people talk about, why can't we use the floodlights? So, first question, is there any local restriction here in the amount of times from the residents around the ground that you can have floodlights on?
No, not at all. I think a lot of people feel that, you know, the issue we have is that the local authority says you can only turn on your lights so many times. The decision as to whether you use floodlights or not is a cricketing decision made at the beginning of every season. Last season, the team decided to use floodlights. This year, they decided not to. The reason for that, and I wasn't here, but my understanding of the situation is it's very, very difficult at times to pick up the ball in those conditions. It's very, very difficult. And they felt that the inconsistency as to when the lights would go on and off, which is an umpire's decision, of course, made it really, really difficult for them to get consistency within play.
One thing I would say, Zach, is that cricket is in the entertainment business, and I don't just mean this for Sussex, I mean it across the Championship, I mean it in the Test Arena. When you've got spectators in the ground and there are floodlights, is there not an obligation for cricket to say, well, the lights are here, you know, for goodness sake, let's use them? It may not be ideal, but we've got people in the ground, let's use them.
I fully accept the entertainment point. I fully accept the fact that people have travelled a long way to watch cricket, and it's really disappointing when they turn up and then have to turn around and go away again. But I will personally, we will not compromise the safety of our players under any circumstance.
So just
part of that, you know, that's one of the issues, is the safety here as well.
Sure. So just to completely understand that, no restriction on the residents, it'd be down to Mark Robinson and the players
captain will make the decision, and
on behalf of the club. Yeah,
and we need consistency. You know, someone said to me, "I wouldn't be wonderful if the ECB made a regulation that says this is what's going to happen with floodlights." The principle is absolutely solid, but not every ground has got floodlights.
Message from Graham, who said to me a little bit earlier on, Graham Peters has got a question for Zach. It's just loading up. Some people criticise Sussex for being too much a Brighton and Hove club and not enough a county club. What plans have you to extend the appeal of the club across the whole county and beyond?
Well, thank you for the question. It's an excellent question. One of the challenges that, and I absolutely concur, I think we do come over a bit too Brighton Hove centric. From my point of view, it's important that we do spread that word, the word of Sussex, right across the county, right out to its extremities. And in the next few weeks, I'll be announcing an ambassador scheme, which will pick up individuals that, not necessarily within the sport, working within their community, that can be our eyes and ears and really communicate with the club on an ongoing basis, and for us to drive messages out there. So that's one of the things that we're going to do. So we've signed up our first ambassador. I did that last week in Burwash. That's almost on the Kent borders. And we're going to be sort of putting a press release out there inviting people to apply for these roles. They're honorary roles. They'll attract a complimentary membership and the misfortune of having lunch with me once a year. But really just to catch up on really what's going on in Sussex and understanding why people don't connect with us. Because I think it's, you know, for us, we have to work really, really hard in getting people here.
So is it sort of eyes and ears for you on the ground? Is that what it is?
Yeah, part of it, yes. And a two-way communication. Those that are in cricket, that, you know, they're already connected in some shape or form through their clubs and what have you. We just need to increase that.
And how important is that linked into my next question, which is about youth development as well? Is that part of it as well? I mean, there are some youngsters coming through. Young Harry Finch has played a game.
It's crucial.
Right.
It's absolutely crucial. this is aimed at the audience, as I said, just outside of cricket. They're thinking about getting involved. It's important that we connect with them. That's that next generation. The start of the championship season being fixtures being on a Sunday means that the Saturday social cricketer is now going to be available for the first time.
Yeah.
So we need to do work within that market as well.
And it's something else that we spoke about earlier on in the season, Zach, was that, I mean, Martin was saying earlier on, Durham don't play away from the Riverside, so they've not played out of the Riverside since, I think, they played at Stockton in 2006. Sussex do play away from the headquarters. They play at Arundel, they play at Horsham, both those grounds being in the west of the county. So are there any plans at all or for the east of the county? I'm thinking predominantly Hastings and Eastbourne.
There's a desire, certainly, to spread our cricket right across the county, on the understanding that, one, the fixtures work and the logistics around it, moving teams backwards and forwards, and finally the facilities have got to be first class.
Right.
We're not going to take our players somewhere where the facilities just frankly aren't up to snuff. Now, we will have our discussions with Eastbourne and those areas and see whether there's an opportunity, but there's absolutely, for us, providing we can make it work. It just so happens that we're established at Horsham and Arundel, and they're established and successful festivals in their own right. That's circumstance. I mean, I think we did play, Trevor can help me, when was the last time we played in Eastbourne?
2001.
Yeah, and we had a twos match there last year, didn't we? Yeah, so I think we need to do a bit of work and work with the guys in that area and say, well, what is it that we need to do and to get ready to receive further cricket.
Yeah, so really that's for the long haul, I guess, really.
Yeah,
Zach,
I'm no expert, but I don't believe there's a facility is ready today for us to go and play cricket in that part of the world.
We're talking about women's cricket, we've spoken about the County Ground, we've spoken about taking the game away to complete the circle of first class cricket, youth cricket, women's cricket. I know there's also blind cricket here in Sussex as well, and disabled cricket. Can you sort of give us an update on that and how it's going?
Really well. We, as you know, we have our Santander Disability Day, which was a huge success, and visually impaired cricket featured there. Tim Shutt, who heads that up on the recreational side, has done an amazing job. And as we speak, he's actually with some representatives of the ECB discussing the whole recreational game in a couple of doors down. So very, very active. So, yeah, you know, we're really pleased in the progress we're making. And I think it's fair to say that across all forms of cricket, we're very strong. Very, very happy that we're making the progress there.
As regards next season or the end of this season, that's a slightly difficult question, and feel free not to answer if you don't want to. You know, presumably you sit down with Mark Robinson at some time, and you know, we all have a job appraisal at work, and you know you get good, whatever it is, satisfactory. I just wonder, when you sit down with Mark at the end of the season, you know, quite how that review might go and what your thoughts might be. If you had to sort of give a, you know, an out of 10 mark for Sussex this season, what would the chief exec's view be?
Well, I mean, I've never had a question like this asked, you know, in public. What would, you know, discussing one of our key members here, with their performance. Mark has done an outstanding job. Hard working, committed, cut him in half, and you read Sussex running through him.
Absolutely.
I think he set standards that other counties are really envious of, and from my point of view, you know, his heart and his values are exactly what were the essence of this club. So, you know, I'm not going to discuss areas for development improvement. It's not appropriate and frankly not necessary. But I feel really privileged to be working with him, and I think the county is very lucky to have him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to sort of link that to the performance of Chris Jordan as well this season, who's come here from Surrey, a player who, for you know, injuries, but I think, you know, other reasons, or couldn't make it into the Surrey side. He's come down here. You know, he's a revelation. He's on the verge of the Ashes squad. He's going with the performance squad to Australia. I was going to say, that must say a lot about Mark's motivation. And Chris indeed spoke last night about the backroom staff, not Mark, but his coaching team as well.
Yeah, we've got a reputation over the years of taking players and bringing the best out of them. I think that continues. But the desire and the willingness has to be there. And it's got to come from the coach. It's got to come from a joined-up approach right the way through. Everyone plays a part in Chris Jordan, bringing Chris Jordan's potential. First and foremost, it's got to be the coaching and the professional setup. But beyond that, every one of us has a role to play, making him feel welcome, making him feel comfortable, taking issues away from him. Not just him. Every player will get the same treatment. And we create a platform for an individual, I believe, to excel. ultimately they got to take ownership and move forward. But I think we create that environment and we do it really well. And it does come from Mark. But I worked with Chris when I was at Surrey for a short period of time. His potential has never been in question. And what happened or didn't happen at Surrey, frankly, is irrelevant now. What's relevant is what he's doing now and what he aims to do tomorrow.
Yeah, and actually I wonder as well with Asha Zaidi, well, that's another case in point with Sussex, you know, being prepared to have a look at a player who's been playing league cricket in Lancashire. Yeah. Look what he's done out here the last two matches.
Lovely first shot, wasn't it? Well, nearly took Trevor's head off.
Well, I think it's the first time. I remember watching the game, the first ball's gone for six. Actually, the fog's cleared a little bit, which is the good news.
I think someone yelled out, it's not 2020. But no. I mean, look, it's great. That's what we're about, isn't it? That's giving people an opportunity. Let's see where that goes. But he certainly won the hearts of the spectator, that's for sure, and the fan. And he's referred to as Little Mushy, and which is quite good because I think he's 31 years of age.
Can I ask about your views as well on away from Sussex, but perhaps a general question in terms of the IPL and how difficult that is for a coach and a management team who's trying to plan for the season. I mean, here obviously you have Luke Wright, who, you know, that there are vast fortunes to be made in the IPL. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody argues you can't. You know, if players are being handed a lot of money, you can't blame them for going. But it is difficult, isn't it, Zach, when you get someone as key as Luke Wright, who's potentially missing for the first month and a bit of the season. I just wonder what the view around cricket on that is.
I think it is a challenge. We can't deny that the IPL has got a huge lure and the financial rewards, if you play, are really, really good. But how many English players actually go and play in the IPL? I don't know what the number is, but it's not hundreds, is it? It's a handful. Yeah, how many actually play? A lot of people go out and they sit on the bench. So I think what's important for us is that if we believe it's right for Luke or any other player and it's part of their development, then there's got to be a reason why we wouldn't do it. There isn't a collective sort of we do not compete as an English game in IPL. That's not the case. They go through the proper process of registration. But yeah, it's a challenge. But then again, we didn't really want to go to the last Durham match with, you know, such a weak squad, but it's the price you pay for having talented players. They move in slightly different circles, and you play with the cards you're dealt, I'm afraid. So we make the best of it. And there's those that say that actually Luke has developed as a player by playing at that level. I'm not qualified to quantify that,
well,
but I thought he looked pretty good last night in particular. Yeah,
this morning as well.
yeah.